And this is Dr. Andy coming to you live on a Wednesday afternoon from KDVS. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We've got two great guests, three actually, in store for you this afternoon. I hope that you can stick around for the entire program. We'll be joined first on the live line by Kim Edwards. Kim Edwards is the New York Times best-selling author of the book The Memory Keeper's Daughter, which spent over 100 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, including about 20 weeks, if I remember correctly, at the number one spot. Kim Edwards will be speaking tomorrow evening at the Crest Theater at 7:30 p.m. as part of the California Lectures series. I believe there are still tickets available for that. If you Google Kim Edwards Crest Theater California Lectures, you can't help but find just the information that you need. She'll be in conversation with the poet Susan Kelly DeWitt. We'll be joined in a moment by Kim Edwards. Then in the second half of the program, Shannon D'Armond will be here. She will be giving a poetry reading on Friday as part of the Other Voice poetry series, which is hosted by Allegra Silberstein, the poet laureate of the city of Davis. Shannon D'Armond is the creator and editor of the YOLO Crow, the quarterly literary magazine that celebrates the writing and the people of YOLO County. And then, at 5:50, just before the end of the hour, we will hear from Matias Gutierrez. He'll be coming to us live from San Francisco, and we'll get an update on what is going on with 90.3 FM in San Francisco, radio station KUSF. It's one of our sister stations, and one might say, without much hyperbole, that that station is under attack. If you're interested in maintaining, protecting, and celebrating the sort of wide-ranging programming, non-corporate programming that you hear in every radio show here on KDBS, then I hope that you'll stick around for that, because KUSF may need our help. But first, New York Times bestselling author Kim Edwards, when we return from this musical break here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis. Thanks very much for supporting your local campus and community radio station, serving the entire Sacramento Valley and everywhere else via the World Wide Web. Kim Edwards is my guest this afternoon. Kim Edwards' stories and essays have appeared in a wide range of periodicals, including Plowshares, Zoetrope, and the Paris Review. Her work has won many honors, including a National Magazine Award for Excellence in Fiction and a Pushcart Prize. and it's also been included in the Best American Short Stories collection. Her collection, The Secret of a Fire King, was shortlisted for the 1998 Penn Hemingway Award, and she received a Winning Writers Award in 2002. Her novel, The Memory Keeper's Daughter, was a huge hit for her and for her publisher. It was selected for a Barnes & Noble Discovery Award, and it won the Kentucky Literary Award for Fiction in 2005. As I mentioned earlier, it spent a great number of weeks atop, and then on the New York Times bestseller list. It was translated into a great number of languages, and many people have been waiting for her follow-up effort. Well, that book, that first book, was The Memory Keeper's Daughter. She has a new book, which she's excited to tell us about tomorrow at an event, part of the California Lecture Series at the Crest Theater. The Crest Theater is at downtown Davis. That takes place tomorrow, Thursday, January 20th, at 7:30 p.m. She'll be talking about her new book, The Lake of Dreams. And now, here she is, Kim Edwards. Welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here. And I'm excited about this event tomorrow. Typically, when one goes on a book tour, one might, say, go to a meeting room in a library or maybe a Barnes & Noble or some other large bookstore. It must be a thrill for you to fill an auditorium in downtown Sacramento and to be questioned for an hour or so by such a charming person, as will be the case tomorrow when you get to talk to Susan Kelly DeWitt about your new book, The Lake of Dreams.
It is. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a highlight of the tour, I think. It sounds like a terrific event, and I'm glad to be part of it.
Excellent. Well, many people, as I mentioned in your introduction, read your book, The Memory Keeper's Daughter, and you created some characters there who people really sympathized with, were curious about, and many of them were many of those readers were hoping to see at least one of those characters in The Lake of Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
How much pressure did you feel to write a sequel to your first book, which had been so successful, versus telling other stories and seeing what other sorts of explorations you wanted to engage in?
Well, it's true that it came up an awful lot when I was on tour for The Memory Keeper's Daughter. People really, many people asked about a sequel almost every place I went. But for me, the story of The Memory Keeper's Daughter felt finished. You know, I told the story that I wanted to tell with that, and I hadn't ever imagined a sequel, and I didn't really see my way forward with a sequel. I had another book, in fact, The Lake of Dreams. I had started already. I had started it before The Memory Keeper's Daughter was even published, and so I had been immersed in that, and that was the one that was gripping me, and that's the one I wanted to go back to.
Excellent. And back you did. And when you say back, the Lake of Dreams of the title, isn't that part of, or as you imagined it, part of the Finger Lakes of New York? Is that the setting?
It is. The Lake of Dreams is actually a fictional town, but the setting is real. The geographical area, the Finger Lakes of upstate New York, is where I grew up. And they got their name because when you look at them from the sky, it looks like a giant hand pressed into the earth. The lakes were formed by the retreat of glaciers, which dug out ancient riverbeds. And so the lakes are, you know, pretty narrow, 1 to 2 or 3 miles wide at their widest, very long. Some of them are 48 miles long and deep, very deep and cold and clear water. They're lovely.
Wonderful. So a magical place, but one that not every reader will know much about.
That's true. Yes, a kind of a hidden secret.
I know that you call Kentucky your home these days, but did you return to that part of New York to do research for your book, The Lake of Dreams?
I did, in fact. I went, part of the Lake of Dreams has a character who returns home after a long time and makes a discovery that sends her on a quest to find a hidden ancestor. And one of the things that she discovers has to do with the suffragette movement, which, of course, took place a stone's throw away from where I grew up, although I didn't really know that much about it when I was growing up. So I did research about that, and it was absolutely fascinating to go to the sites where, you know, the 1848 Women's Rights Convention was held, and to Elizabeth Cady Stanton's home, which has been restored and is now an historic site, and just to walk those streets that I had known well, but then now I knew that had this information about all these other people in other generations who had walked there too.
Yeah, as someone who grew up in Washington, D.C., I know that feeling of having lived in a historically important part of the country, but knowing it just is home and mm-hmm. not being quite ready to take in all of the historical prominence of one's hometown.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's definitely a different lens.
Definitely. If you're just joining us this afternoon, I'm chatting with Kim Edwards. She's the author of a brand new book called The Lake of Dreams. Came out just a couple weeks ago. She's also the author of The Memory Keeper's Daughter. I think one thing that's interesting about both of these books is the ways that you're able to harness some of the tension of a murder mystery where we're hoping to find things out, but without a murder.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering to what extent you felt that there was any kind of influence on you of a very successful genre, but a genre of the murder mystery that has one particular reader, and I think that that you're attracting different sort of readers, and especially readers that may appreciate a greater historical depth and character depth, and I'd say more reflective and curious characters than you might typically see in, say, a murder mystery.
Well, you know, I didn't really think of it as a mystery per se. I was very conscious of the fact that, like The Memory Keeper's Daughter, The Lake of Dreams has a secret at its center. And but unlike The Memory Keeper's Daughter, where everybody knows the secret at the beginning, right from chapter one, but some of the characters don't know the secret, and a lot of the narrative tension, I think, comes from that fact of knowing more than the characters do. With The Lake of Dreams, I was very aware that I was sort of doing the mirror opposite of that. You know, structurally,
right.
I was setting it up so that I was doing it sort of to challenge myself as a writer. What would it be like to write a novel where no one knew the secret, including me? I have to say, when I began the book, I didn't know what was to come, except that I knew there was something. And so it was a very different, you know, the essential process of writing was the same, but structurally, and it presented a different set of challenges, which were fun for me to work with.
Wonderful. Well, my guest this afternoon is Kim Edwards, and she's got a new book out to follow up on The Memory Keeper's Daughter. It's called The Lake of Dreams. She will be in conversation tomorrow with Susan Kelly DeWitt, who's a local poet, author, and educator, as part of the California Lecture Series at the Crest Theater at 7:30. That's tomorrow, January 20th. In downtown Sacramento, and I believe there are still tickets available for that event. So let me ask you this, Kim Edwards. You must have faced what every author faces with a sophomore effort after a hugely successful freshman novel, and that is the difficulty of kind of removing yourself from pressures, from fans, from publicists, from editors, and finding both the time and the space to write. You mentioned before about not having outlined the entire plot of your book, but actually following your characters to see where they would take you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering how you went about finding that that time and place and interruption-free mind space to get the necessary work done.
Well, it took a while, I have to say. I think of it now as a real gift that I had started The Lake of Dreams and was well into it. I had discovered the voice of the protagonist, Lucy Jarrett. I knew something about her story, and I was beginning to sort of open up some of the things that were happening in the past, and I was very intrigued. So when The Memory Keeper's Daughter took off the way it did, it was a wonderful surprise, but it was a surprise, and it was quite a whirlwind for a while. And it was wonderful to be able to go out and to meet readers. I think that was the best part of it, was to be able to travel around the country and really around the world and talk to people about the story that had touched such a chord with them. But then, you know, things began to die down a little bit, and I wanted to get back to writing. I've been writing for, you know, several decades. I've been writing since I was, you know, since I can remember. I've loved to do it, and it's something that's deeply woven into my life, and so I really missed writing when I wasn't writing. So I made a very focused effort when things began to calm down with A Memory Keeper's Daughter to sort of reclaim that kind of contemplative space from which I write. So I turned off the internet, I took all the games off the computer, and I just slowly and gradually worked my way back into that quiet.
Wonderful. Good for you. I know that the main character spends time overseas in the beginning of this book, and that I remember reading about Japan and Indonesia, and I was thinking about that as I heard the news that Sergeant Shriver had died just a couple days ago, the founder and first director of the Peace Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, when you it's often the Peace Corps that will bring young Americans overseas to find adventures and do some good. And I was wondering if you could say a little bit about your own travels overseas and how many parallels there are between you and your main character when you brought her back home to the States.
Yeah, well, I use the geographical locations I know so that I can more deeply imagine the characters, I think. And so I did use experiences that I'd had overseas. In particular, for example, the first chapter opens with Lucy being in a very unstable state of mind. She's at a kind of crossroads in her life, not sure where her relationship is going. She doesn't have a job at that point, although she's a scientist. And so the first summer that I was in Japan, there were all sorts of little earthquakes. There was some kind of landmass forming in the bay outside the city where I lived. And so there were constant little earthquakes, and I had never experienced them before, and I found them very unsettling. So I gave that to Lucy as one of her experiences. And I'm sure that, Lucy comes back to the United States having been away for about 10 years, much longer than I was away. But I'm sure that my own experiences and the kind of reverse culture shock I had coming back to this country after such an extended time away filtered into Lucy's perspective, too.
I bet. We're talking about a brand new book called The Lake of Dreams with the author Kim Edwards. She'll be reading tomorrow evening. Reading and speaking and conversing, talking about passages from her new book at the Crest Theater as part of the California Lecture Series. So with this book tour and with your last book tour, which it must have been probably extended beyond your original expectations when you and your publisher were discovering how well The Memory Keeper's Daughter was doing,
mm-hmm.
What do you find people who come to see you are most curious about? Do they ask about you? Do they ask about your characters, your settings, your plans for your next book? What are the things that your readers are curious about when they meet you for the first time?
Well, they ask about all of those things, but I think that the thing that comes up the most, I'd have to say, is, where did the stories come from? How do you find these ideas? And that's always a really interesting thing to talk about because it's a little bit mysterious. It's not easy to pinpoint it. In some cases, like The Memory Keeper's Daughter, I can look at a particular moment when I was sort of given that story or given the idea for the story, although I didn't write it for another 3 or 4 years. But with other stories, including The Lake of Dreams, things sort of tend to gather, accrue over time until they gain a kind of critical mass and become a story. And so I can talk about particular moments where, for example, Halley's Comet makes an appearance in The Lake of Dreams. It's and that's an idea that I had way back when I was a student and went out to try to see Halley's Comet. And I thought, wow, that would be a wonderful way to tie an intergenerational novel together. But I wasn't ready to write an intergenerational novel for many more years. But I just sort of saved that and collected other things and then eventually began this book.
Wonderful. When you're giving advice to students who might be, for instance, graduating from a university like UC Davis and thinking about a graduate creative writing program, or maybe they're a year or two into that program, what was the advice that you wish that you had had when you were starting off as a fiction writer? And what's the sort of advice that you offer these youngsters when they come to you looking for some wisdom?
Well, I think the most valuable thing that ever happened to me was that when I finished my own MFA program at the University of Iowa, I moved from there to the rural east coast of Malaysia. And what that did was two things. At first, it took me from this very rich literary environment and put me in a place where I sort of had to work to create any literary environment at all. And so I just read all the time. At that time, there was no email, so I didn't worry about sending things out. I didn't worry about being published at all. I just wrote. I wrote letters. lectures, I wrote essays, I wrote journals, I wrote stories, and I think because I was so far away from any kind of, you know, anyone, you know, observing my work in any way, I took a lot of risks and that I might not have taken otherwise, and I think it helped me really to develop my own voice. So that's the advice I would give to young writers, not necessarily move to Malaysia, but try to block out the sense that, you know, you need some kind of immediate affirmation through publication, but rather to write for the joy of writing and just write as much as you can and read as much as you can.
I guess in that way, writing is like many other skills that you need to spend a great number of hours practicing it before you get good at it or can recognize that you have become good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Students today especially have so many distractions that it's difficult for them to find that that writer's space and, mm-hmm. and a room of one's own to get the work done. Certainly, I guess the rent on a room of one's own would be cheaper in Malaysia than it would be in many other places.
That's true.
Yeah.
At least it used to be.
Great. So give us a sense of your book tour. You'll be in Sacramento tomorrow evening as part of the California Lectures Series.
Right.
And are you crossing the country? Are you leaving the country? What are your plans for this particular book tour?
Well, I'm kind of in the middle of the U.S. tour right now. Excuse me. I started on the East Coast, and now I'm here. And as you said, speaking tomorrow at the Crest Theater, I'm looking forward to that. And from there, I go to San Francisco, L.A., San Diego, Portland, and Seattle. And then I'm home for a while before I go abroad.
Excellent. And in terms of your own teaching, you're really in writer and kind of self-publicist mode right now.
Mm-hmm.
How are you able to mix in your teaching duties? And are there parts of that that you miss when you spend a lot of time in, say, hotel rooms around the country?
You know, I love teaching, and actually I had just applied for tenure the year that Memory Keeper's Daughter took off. Like, I applied for tenure 1 month, and it took off the next. So it kind of took the pressure off, which was great. But I'm on leave right now. I love teaching it, but I can't seem to juggle all of these different things in my life. So I've taken a couple of years of unpaid leave just to have time to write and, again, to be able to kind of have a purity of focus. I use the exercises I use in my classroom are things that I use myself as a writer. So it's a very kind of symbiotic relationship I have with students. I learn from them as they learn from me. So I do miss it, but I don't know exactly when I'll be able to go back to it.
Well, it's nice to have options, and it's nice to have so many people who are learning from your efforts one book at a time around the country and around the world. Well, Kim Edwards, it's been a pleasure to speak with you. I'll remind people who are listening today that Kim Edwards will be in conversation tomorrow evening with Susan Kelly DeWitt as part of the California Lecture Series. That's Thursday, January 20th at the Crest Theater at 7:30 p.m. That's on K Street in downtown Sacramento. I hope that the Lake of Dreams does very well for you, and I thank you very much for spending some time with us on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
Same here. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Stick around. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. We have to hear from Ricardo Montalban really quick, talking about Shriners Hospitals. We'll be right back.
There are many ways to measure success. For the Shriners, it's the nearly 700,000 children with orthopedic and burn problems that they've helped. This is Ricardo Montalban. For over 80 years, the Shriners have provided state-of-the-art medical care to kids all over North America, totally free of charge. There is a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child that the Shriners might be able to help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Many opportunities to see cultural events this weekend, and the weekend starting on Thursday. We were just speaking about Kim Edwards and her presentation of her new novel called The Lake of Dreams at the California Lecture Series in Sacramento. Also tomorrow evening, there will be a performance by Christian Kiefer and Michael Spurgeon. These are a couple poets who are also professors at American River College. Christian Kiefer earned his PhD here at UC Davis. He's a poet, he's a musician, he's a novelist now, and he and his colleague Michael Spurgeon will be reading from new work at the John Itzulis Gallery tomorrow evening, January 20th at 8 p.m., 521 First Street. That's part of the Poetry Night reading series. If you'd like to find out more, you can visit poetryindavis.com. Well, Shannon DeArmond is my guest this afternoon, and she is representing the Yolo Crow. The Yolo Crow is, I think, Yolo County's oldest independent literary journal.
As far as I know.
Okay. And as such, it plays a very important part in the literary life of the city of Davis and other Yolo County cities. The mission of the Yolo Crow is to give local writers a place to publish and to be read and to provide Yolo County with a cross-section of literature that represents the myriad of perspectives and vision in the home county of KDVS. The Yolo Crow uses a local independent printer and sells only at local independent bookstores. And Shannon DeArmond is here to represent the Crow, to represent some of the authors who will be reading this coming Friday at the Other Voice Poetry Series, which is run by Allegra Silverstein. And that's Friday, January 21st at 7:30. Like the event tomorrow night at the John Itzulis Gallery, there will be an open mic after the featured readers. So you too, if you'd like to participate in this burgeoning local literary community, you'll have a chance to as well. Shannon DeArmond, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming by. And so tell me a little bit about what inspired your founding of the Yolo Crow. Was that in 2005?
2005. I was sitting at a table with a few other writers, and we were talking about the difficulties in getting your work off your laptop or out of your composition book and into the hands of people who can actually read it, particularly the logistics of choosing a journal and how do you decide who to submit to. And you can go into the bookstore and pick up a copy of the Writer's Market or the Poet's Market, which is one of those big yellow book indexes of thousands of journals across the country, and scroll through it, and you've never heard of any of these journals. You don't read them. You can't get a copy of them around here. You don't have any connection with them at all. So how do you pick the place that you want to submit your work to be part of that community? And isn't it a shame that there isn't something local, something that you could submit to and turn the pages on, pick up at the Avid Reader or one of the local shops, and when you open it up and look at the table of contents, see people that you know, people that you work with, people that you live next door to?
Absolutely. And so you started in 2005. Did it turn out to be more work than you anticipated?
Oh, always.
There's a leading question.
Always. It is a lot of work. We're entirely volunteer-run, and our volunteers work very hard for us. We're all people with other professional jobs, lawyers and teachers and farmers and people who work in the community who like to read and who like to write and work really hard to put it together.
That's wonderful. And if people wanted to find out more about the Yolo Crow online, what website should they visit?
www.yolocrow.com.
All right. And tell me about the range of work that came in those first years and some of the difficulty of making those decisions. Do you all read double blind, as it were? Do you read only, you read poems and stories without seeing who's written them?
Yes. Yes, we do. It's really necessary in such a small community because you do know a lot of the people who are submitting in, so... We definitely always, all the editors don't see the names of the authors. They only see the names of the piece, and they're tagged with a serial number. You do sort of get a feel for a lot of our common submitters over time. You see a piece come in, you go, oh, I know who wrote this.
Right.
But we try as best as we can to be objective about it.
And then when there's the big editorial reveal and the names are disclosed, are there surprises? Do you ever have the problem of... one author getting multiple pieces when you like to spread it around, you know, that sort of thing?
We have a database that tags our authors with a serial number so we can see how many pieces have been well rated and, oh, three of them are all by the same person. Well, maybe we'll pick a favorite. But
right.
It is a challenge. Actually, the biggest challenge has been having to thin out when you get so many wonderful pieces and pick the pieces that really are going to make the edition. We have a limited number of pages, and those of us who have submitted to other journals have always gotten the dreaded rejection letter in the mail that says, it's not you, it was a wonderful piece, it just didn't fit with our edition, and now we're the people sending out the letter that says,
right.
Oh, but it's really a great piece, it's just we got 15 love poems this month and we can't
right.
publish them all. So that's been a challenge.
I bet. And then... What sort of discoveries have you made either about the literary qualities of our county or about individual authors? I'm sure that there are a lot of times when the names are revealed to you and to your co-editors that there are a lot of names there that you don't recognize at all.
Oh, absolutely. We get new people all the time who submit stuff to us that we've never heard from before, and it's always exciting.
And are bios included in the Yellow Crow for individual authors?
Not typically. We strip it down so that there's as much room for as much poetry and as much fiction as we can get in there. We do have one big contest every year, and the winner of the contest gets a full-page bio.
Excellent. And I alluded earlier to the focus on the local energies of people here as well as, say, printers and that sort of thing. Tell us a little bit about the process. How do you keep that that whole process local?
One of the things that we started out with is we're all real big fans of our local independent bookstores, and we have a lot of them around here for your average community in this country, I think, today. We really want to keep them as much as possible. So we only sell in the local independent stores. You can find us in the Avid Reader. You can find us at Newspeak.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Clatter's Used Books in Woodland. The local bookstores, we go through local printers, which means it might be a little bit more expensive, but we feel like we're supporting local business in our own small way, and that's important to us, something that we keep going.
Does one find ads in the Yellow Crow?
Occasionally, we do offer advertising,
mm-hmm.
and you can find out more information about that on our website as well.
Excellent. Well, Shannon DeArmond is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We are talking about the Yellow Crow. And when we come back from this musical break and hear from the Linux Users Group of Davis, we'll find out some more about this event that's happening on Friday as part of the Other Voice Poetry Reading Series. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit Lou Gehrig's website at lougehrig.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019 or via email at root@lougehrig.org.
This is Dr. Andy with an important message. Dylan Sullivan, attorney at law, reminds all of our young people that every day, somewhere, some student with a lot of potential just gives up. Don't be a statistic. Stay in school and get your education. If you want a career instead of a job, it starts with you and the choices you make. It's never too late to graduate. This important message is brought to you by Dylan Sullivan, attorney at law in Sacramento, on the air because he knows education is important to all of us. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, thanking you for tuning into your local campus and community station. We have been broadcasting here on the UC Davis campus for almost the last 40 years now. And very happy, as always, to promote the cultural and artistic efforts of local organizations. Last week on this radio show, we welcomed representatives of the Davis Shakespeare Ensemble. And you might know that their production of Twelfth Night finishes up this weekend with shows on Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 o'clock, and then two on Sunday at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. That's at the Arboretum. You'd like to find on the UC Davis campus, if you'd like to find out more, then you could visit shakespeare.davis.com or shakespeareensemble.com. Another event happening this Friday is the Other Voice Poetry Series. It's at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis in Far West Davis, 27074 Patwin Road. Best to consult a map. And there will be a number of readers there, some of them representing the local literary magazine, The Yolo Crow. I have the editor of The Yolo Crow here in the studio, and we're talking about her work for the last 5.5 years or so. Shannon DeArmond, give us a sense of what will be happening this coming Friday night at the Unitarian Church of Davis.
The Other Voice is a regular poetry reading series. They meet once a month on the third Friday, and Allegra Silverstein, as you mentioned before, is our poet laureate, and she runs the reading, and she called us up and said, hey, could you bring out some Yolo Crow writers and have them read for us on this Friday? So that's what we're doing. We have five writers who are going to be reading on Friday. Douglas Minnis is our first reader. He's one of our editors, and he's a longtime submitter to The Crow. He's a wonderful poet. Peter Goblin's probably the longest-standing submitter to The Crow. He's been with us since pretty much the beginning. We always look forward to seeing his work. Carlos Overstreet is a new poet to The Crow. We've only been getting submissions from him for the last year or so and really enjoying his work. Patricia Hickerson, who was our contest winner for our annual Halloween writing contest this year, is going to be reading some of her poetry. And then Anthony Hilton, who's actually a fiction writer, and we're going to sneak him in there anyway. Don't tell anyone.
Excellent. And so that's this coming Friday. I know that I think I've seen Allegra Silverstein's work in The Yolo Crow as well.
Frequently.
Yeah. So another great supporter of local arts and artists. And if I remember correctly, there's an open mic after the featured readers.
Yeah, it should start about 8:30.
Excellent. And you brought some copies of your journal with you. It's a quarterly journal. What editions did you bring? Remind us where we can find these in town. And would you like to read something representing one of the copies of The Yolo Crow?
Sure. Our most recent edition, Volume 20, just hit the bookstore shelves last weekend. So you can find that at the Avid Reader here in Davis, at Newsbeat in Davis, and also at Jerry Clatter's Used Books in Woodland. You can also find us in the stacks at Shield Library or at Woodland Public Library, and you can also pick up copies on our website if you're listening from far away.
which people do sometimes. And that's the YOLOCROW.com.
YOLOCROW.com. And then I brought some things along to read. I thought I might read one of Douglas Minnis' poet's poems, if he'll forgive me. One of my favorites of his is from Volume 10. It's an older edition. It's called White Gladiolus. Houses bright red, houses blue, and houses orange, the happy colors trimmed with magenta and red bougainvillea, each posed in primary colors waiting for the postcard photo. The floors of the outdoor room are covered with pots of cherry-colored geraniums, laundry lines filled in the first sun for hurried drying before the oncoming rain of dust erases the scrubbing effort. Dogs of many yellows sleep where the roof meets the banister walls, drawing the first warmth of the winter day. The morning streets wake to the smells of tamales, chilies, and refried beans. The slap-slap of tortillas flattened and placed on the thin grill over charcoal provide a rhythm for the breakfast concert. Stooped old women greet each other with warm morning hugs. A flatulent bus moves from a curb, a progress marker between the donkey cart loaded with fresh-cut hay and the roaring overhead jet loaded with world travelers. The church bell rings the authoritative voice of the angels. The sun strikes the golden bell tower, the tower a holy token from the pious 4 centuries ago. Slow walkers dressed in widow's black parade from the churchyard headed to the cemetery carrying white gladiolas for the recently dead. In this is a land where the living are cherished and the dead not forgotten, generation after generation built upon the previous one, tied together with white gladiolus.
Wonderful. That's very pretty. I like the way that it starts out with a description and then gradually adds some additional meanings, interpretations, and patterns to those descriptions so that they become deeper than the surfaces they at first present. So that's very nice. And that was a poem by Doug Minnis. Tell us the title once again.
White Gladiolus.
White Gladiolus.
He was published in our most recent edition as well, and he'll be our first reader up on the poetry reading series with the other voice on Friday.
Excellent. So I'd love it if you could tell us something about the contest that you hold each year at the YOLO Crow. And are those contest winners typically published in the fall?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us about that.
Our fall edition is our anniversary edition. Our first edition was published in the fall. So to commemorate that, we do a Halloween writing contest every year. We'll release a theme and we'll gather in all the submissions we can on that particular theme, and the winner gets a free year subscription to the Crow and an interview posted next to their piece. And this year's theme is, it's a little known fact, but a group of crows is not called a flock, it's called a murder. So the theme for this year's Halloween contest is murder, and you can use that word any way you like. You can give us poetry, you can give us fiction. Has to follow our standard submission guidelines, which you'll find on our website at www.yolocrow.com, and mail it to our box at 216 F Street, number 150, Davis, California, Attention Halloween Writing Contest.
Excellent. And in terms of your expectations of following the rules and the submission guidelines, at times they can be seen as more complex than is typically the case for a journal. And I've always imagined that that's because you want to put copies in everyone's hands and help with the copying costs by spreading them out to all of your submitters. But I'm wondering if that's right and if you could say a little bit more about that.
That is true. We ask you to give us 4 copies of a piece when you send it in. And as before, we talked about how all of the pieces are evaluated anonymously. The editors don't see the names of the authors. So when the submissions come in, one is tagged with a serial number. It's put in our vault that is not touched. And then the other ones are sent out to the editors to be read. We have a pretty fast turnaround given our volunteer workflow status.
Right.
So in order to keep us turning around and make sure everybody has a chance to read it, we always send each piece through at least 3 editors. We ask you to send us that many copies. Generally speaking, though, we try and keep our submission process as simple as possible.
Yeah, definitely. Well, if you want to find out more about this, then you can visit yolocrow.com. We just have a couple minutes yet. I'm here with Shannon DeArmond, the editor of The Yolo Crow. And she and other Yolo Crow authors will be appearing at the Universalist Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis this coming Friday night at 7:30 as part of the Other Voice Poetry Reading Series. Could you share with us one more poem before we let you go?
Sure.
And while you find one, can I ask you to say something about the cover art of The Yolo Crow?
The cover art, yes. We accept art submissions for our cover. We don't have any art within the magazine, but mm-hmm. we do put local art on the cover. So if you're an artist and you would like to submit something, please, again, see our submission guidelines on our website. Or in the back of every edition of The Crow, there's a page in there, too, that tells you how to go about submitting your work. We request black and white drawings only, and there has to be a crow figured in there somewhere.
Right. Excellent. What poem have you chosen to share today?
Okay, this one's called Hearts, and this is one of mine. So if it speaks poorly on the crow, try and understand that I don't speak for the magazine in general.
You will be doubly forgiven, for sure.
Thank you very much. Hearts. I don't know how I found myself sitting across from you once more. New deck of cards on the table, kicked my shoes off on the floor. Seems like this old chair is always waiting and the seat is always warm. Same cracks in the table, cracks in your smile, always true to form. And I don't know what I'm doing, I'm not sure what to say, I don't know who I am, not sure I want to play. I know the cards before I turn them over, I don't need to see their faces. Same thing you always deal, me trouble back with aces. But go ahead and lead your club and I'll follow with my heart. It's not a game but a story and ever and again I play my part. I'm pretty sure I shouldn't be here, I'm not saying what I want to say, I don't know who I am and I'm damn sure I don't want to play. I know your game by heart, but you'll beat me nonetheless. Three more rounds of stony faces before you win, and I confess. And what do I get for my troubles? Empty hands and that sinking feeling. One more bundle for my baggage. Another lesson in dealing. I never should have come here. Doesn't matter what I say. You can't change who I am. I can't change the way you play. Auntie's lost the names awry, shuffling shadows and charades. You'll never be the king of hearts, and I'll always be the queen of spades.
That's wonderful. That was an original poem by Shannon DeArmond. She's the editor of The Yolo Crow, and she and other poets and writers will be appearing this coming Friday night at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis on Patwin Road in West Davis. Shannon, thanks so much for coming by the radio station today.
Thank you very much.
You did a great job. Well, folks, stick around because I believe that we're going to be hearing from Matias Gutierrez, who has an update for us on KUSF. And I've got a little bit more jazz for you. So stick around for the conclusion of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
financial situation becomes increasingly desperate, Freeform Radio struggles to survive. KUSF 90.3 FM, one of our sister stations from the San Francisco area, has abruptly been discontinued. If you would like more information, search for Statement on the Shutdown and Sale of KUSF FM or visit artsandmedia.net, or you could contact Christine McClintock at 415-738-4975.
The city of Roseville is caring for its native folk woodlands by welcoming you to participate in a series of native oak plantings on January 22nd from 9 a.m. to noon. Blue Oak Park is a 43-acre open space near Blue Oaks Drive and Wood Creek Oaks Boulevard. If you are interested in helping plant oak seedlings with tender, loving care, you are encouraged to call 916-924-8733 or visit saptrees.com/events.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. We haven't heard yet from Matias Gutierrez, but there is a situation that you just heard about in that public service announcement regarding the sudden and unexpected shutdown, without warning, of KUSF. KUSF is at 90.3 FM in San Francisco, and it's one of those radio stations that I enjoyed encountering when I lived in Berkeley in the late 80s and early 90s, for it's rare to find on the radio dial a radio station that does not just provide you pretty much music and talk that you can find in almost every American city. Rather, radio programming that is local, that is independent, that is freeform, and that follows more the interests, the enthusiasms, the research, and the musical tastes of local staff, in most cases volunteers, rather than that of corporate sponsors, programmers in faraway cities, and the Clear Channel radio network. One of the reasons that I've volunteered for the last decade here at KDVS doing this radio show is that I feel strongly that if we're going to protect local culture, then we must also protect those radio stations that seek to promulgate and celebrate local culture. Well, as has been the case in cities all over the country, in San Francisco, one of those radio stations has gone silent, and that's KUSF. If you'd like to find out more about what you can do to restore KUSF to its former glory as an independent radio station, presenting independent programming to the people of the Bay Area and beyond for you via the World Wide Web, then I invite you to drop into your favorite search engine the phrase KUSF. Before you know it, you'll encounter a great number of news stories, a number of well-written opinion pieces that speak with great enthusiasm and concern about the loss of this cultural icon in the city of San Francisco. And now, let's go to the live line. Caller, you're on the air live with Dr. Andy on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hello, Dr. Andy. This is Matias Gutierrez, a former KDVS DJ right now, currently at the KUSF meeting that's about to go down an hour from now over at presentation to see what happens, because yesterday the University of San Francisco was purchased, the station was purchased through Intercom and USC to take over KUSF 9.3 FM in San Francisco. So there's going to be a big meeting along with the university president over at 7 p.m. at the Presentation Theater, and it's going to be a big turnout for the community because KUSF is officially off the air and they're changing to an online station.
That's outrageous. So did you have any sort of warning that this purchase would be taking place?
There was absolutely no warning whatsoever. All the KUSF volunteers were stunned. approximately only one person knew and, of course, had a confidentiality agreement not to tell anyone. And then once someone came in for their show at 9 a.m., the USF security just came in, kicked this person out, and then turned off the transmission. And now they're officially off the dial. So if anyone's listening in San Francisco to 90.3 FM, they're static over the air. And now it's going to be changed into a commercial classic rock station, KULX. It's through a complex system of purchases that have been done through the classical station, KDFC, KULX, the classic rock station, and then now the station, KUSF, will be officially off, is officially off the air and will now become an online station. But there are petitions made by volunteer staff and community members in the San Francisco Bay Area to keep KUSF on the air, at least terrestrially.
What is it that listeners of KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis and Sacramento can do to address their concerns about this sudden shutdown of KDVS's sister station in San Francisco?
Yes, anyone can join their Facebook page, Save KUSF. Anyone can like that page. And then also through that page, there's also petitions out to call the administration, to call the USF president by the phone number. His phone number is listed on the webpage, and it's currently 6 p.m., as you can hear by the bell. So 1 hour from now, there's going to be a presentation done by the president and by the academic board and the trustees over at USF to justify why they took KUSF off the air without telling absolutely anyone of the staff, and everyone was completely shocked and taken aback that it was taken off the air.
I certainly imagine that had they had warning, the supporters of KUSF could provide a more vigorous defense. I think all of us in the KDVS community will be following closely to see what can be done to address these concerns, to redress them, and also to see if we can put KUSF, as we've known it for years, back on the air where it should be with free-form community-based radio.
And that's, there's very few left in the country, and KDVS and formerly KUSF was one of them, so it's very important to keep these stations on the air.
All right, Matias Gutierrez, I appreciate you keeping up the good fight even after your time here at KDVS, and we'll be following this story closely. Thanks for phoning in to KDVS this afternoon.
No problem, Dr. Andy.
Take care.
Thank you.
Well, we've come to the end of another radio program. I'd like to thank my guests, Kim Edwards, the New York Times bestselling author who spent 20 weeks at the top of the New York Times bestseller list when her book, The Memory Keeper's Daughter, came out in 2005. She has a new book out, and she'll be talking about that book tomorrow evening as part of the California Lecture Series, Thursday, January 20th at the Crest Theater at 7:30. She'll be in conversation with Susan Kelly DeWitt, the great local poet, and I hope that you will check that out. I'd also like to thank Shannon DeArmond, who has been doing her part to sustain local literary culture through her work at the YOLO Crow. I hope that all of you can come out and see Christian Kiefer and Michael Spurgeon tomorrow night at the John Itzulis Gallery. I'll be there. That's at 8 o'clock. Check out poetryanddavis.com for more information. And I'd like to thank all of you for listening to a full hour of everybody's favorite poetry and technology program. Stick around for some great music, and I'll see you next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry